to the 75th Womanthology podcast. My name is Fiona Tatton, and I'll be your host. Womanthology is the digital magazine and professional community powered by female energy and ingenuity. We champion equal recognition and reward for everyone, sharing opportunities, ideas, and a deep pool of collective wisdom, supporting each other to be unstoppable. In this, our Gender Pay Gap episode, I speak with Vicky Peatman, Director of Product Management at PayScale. Vicky discusses the gender pay gap and what organisations, and crucially their employees, need to know about the new global trend of pay transparency. A quick reminder that you sign up for the Womanthology newsletter by filling in your details on the front page of our website, that's womanthology.co.uk. You can also join our LinkedIn community by visiting linkedin.com/company/womanthology and find us on X, Instagram and Facebook. Welcome to the Womanthology podcast. We have with us Vicky Peatman, and she is Director of Product Management at PayScale. Vicky, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm delighted to be here. Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us from a secret hideaway location, which we won't go into because it's secret.
Yes, but it is beautiful.
You see, I like to add a bit of mystery to the podcast.
Stuff.
But you're very kindly agreed to talk with us about all things gender pay gap today. For the listeners, what we do sometimes is we have a pre-chat. When we're really super keen, we'll have a pre-chat, and we've had a pre-chat, and the pre-chat was just amazing. So I'm really excited to delve into all the gender pay gap secrets and expertise that you hold, and then we can hopefully help everybody else to fix theirs, is the general gist. So no pressure in about half an hour.
No, we're just going to fix societal problems in half an hour.
I think you're the person, so I've got high hopes. No pressure there. So Vicky, could you start by giving us a bit of an overview of your career to date and how you got to doing what you're doing and why you care about it as well, so people can imagine a bit about you? We're setting the scene.
Yeah. So I studied psychology and philosophy at Oxford, and then after that I went straight into HR and did a master's in HR. And then, because I like numbers, I moved into sort of compensation side of HR. So for most of my career, I've been a reward consultant, either with companies such as, you know, Aon, which was Hewitt at the time, or as a freelance consultant. I also have done full HR stuff. I headed up HR for the Middle East for the British Council when I lived out in Doha and Qatar. So I have general HR experience as well, but most of my career has been in reward. A couple of years ago, I was asked by a company called Curo to help develop an equity product. So it was taking the gender pay gap idea and then making it a little bit more holistic, because we'd also do ethnicity pay gaps and disability pay gaps, LGBTQ. It's all about how to pay people fairly as a whole across your organization. So I helped develop that. That then got bought by PayScale, and they didn't want me to be a consultant. And so at that point, I became an employee for the first time in many, many years. And so now I'm at PayScale. It's been quite an exciting journey, and who knew I'd be in director of product at some point, but I still think of myself as a reward professional.
Yeah, well, I can understand why they would want you fully on the team. They're like, yeah, we need this woman. We need her sorting everything out. So could you tell us a bit about PayScale as well?
Yeah, so PayScale is an American company, although we do obviously have a presence here in Europe. It helps companies and employees understand the why behind their pay. So we have various SaaS solutions that help with the compensation annual cycle. So we do market data, benchmarking, annual pay reviews, and of course, like pay equity, fair pay.
Sorry, and SaaS is software as a service.
Software as a service, yes. So it's basically tech.
We like tech. Tech is here to help us. We like that. And in terms of what you're doing with PayScale at the moment, if we were trying to imagine you on a day-to-day basis, what would we be imagining you doing?
So when I joined, I was really in how to get pay equity as a product and as a concept across all the different software solutions that we have. And so I did a lot about that and fair pay, pay transparency, and how we can get it into all of our products. I'm actually at the moment, quite excitingly, working on our market data, building up the integrity of the data, but also building transparency into that, because transparency is the key to fixing basically any inequities within pay. And so how do we make sure that our users of our market data completely understand where that data comes from, how it's calculated, how it's developed, and so that when they are explaining it to their employees, we've been transparent with them, they can be transparent with their employees.
Yeah. So it's good practice all round. That's what we like. Yes. Transparency. Yes. Leading transparency.
Yeah, exactly.
Which always helps. Now, I'm going to throw in a sneaky extra question here, Vicky, which I hope is all right. In large organisations, I didn't really realise, but the structure, it can be quite complicated, can't it? Obviously, there's different pay grades, but there can also be pay families and it crosses over. But it is really hard to get your head around, isn't it? And it can be incredibly complicated, can't it? I can imagine in particular, you're trying to navigate it from the outside when you can't actually see it.
Absolutely. Pay within companies is really complicated. And it's one of the reasons behind that is because it's developed over time without structures in place, because it's actually been quite secretive. And so a lot of companies have just a lot of jobs. They don't really have structures within it. In the 80s, 90s, we got rid of job architecture. And we started being a bit more flexible. Well, actually, we're going back towards that. It's all about job architecture now, because you have to be able to understand the jobs against the other jobs. And so you have to have job families. You have to have job levels. So you can look at your comparable groups. Because it's not about job title. It's about the jobs that are similar to you. And you can't do that if you don't have job architecture. So a lot of companies are trying to wrangle historic structures back into job architecture. So it's a really complicated thing that companies are dealing with at the moment.
And I suppose if you're looking at it from the outside as well, so you're trying to join an organization and you're trying to get the best deal that you can for yourself, it's very difficult because you can't see any of that. Oh, you've got no concept of what that all looks like.
Yes. Pay ranges on job postings is obviously a massive change and is going to revolutionize how we do pay, which is brilliant. But you have to understand how that fits into all the rest of the structure. So you don't really just want to know about what's the pay for this role. You want to know where that role fits within the levels, which level you're in, because a lot of times it's how you come into an organization that really impacts how you're going to be developing. So where your pay is in the future. And that's why salary history bands are so important and this transparency, because negotiation shouldn't necessarily be a thing. There should be a rate for the job. But if you go in and you negotiate lower than someone else who's doing a similar job, and then after that, everyone's getting 3%, 4% or whatever, everything develops off that. So really, it's what you do when you come in. And if you accidentally come in at a lower level than maybe you should, it's a really important thing to understand where the job fits within the job architecture, as well as the pay for that when joining.
Yeah, I think, Vicky, I just need you in all areas of life, on the team, behind me.
I'm just on your shoulder. Yeah. I mean, here's another question to ask. Yeah. And it's difficult because people don't want to ask it. If you want the job, you don't want to upset the people. So how do you ask it is a really important thing. It should be the companies providing this information so it doesn't feel like you're being difficult asking it.
So in terms of the challenges for companies who are looking to address their gender pay gaps, we're very big on hearing from companies that have done something in this space, or they're trying to make progress, they're trying really hard, and what have they done, and trying to understand what's your secret, how are you progressing? If people are saying they're progressing, how are they doing that? But what are the challenges from the company side? So in the UK, there's reporting if it's over 250 employees, and various different things in other countries as well, different challenges that they're addressing. But companies are trying to close these gaps. But from their side, what are the things that are keeping the companies awake at night?
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to fix. And I think companies thought that they would be able to just fix and pay and that'll fix it, right? But it's not actually about pay. It's about opportunity. I mean, fixing equal pay, that's about pay, right? You need to make sure that you're paying equal pay for equal value. That's the law. And so that's about pay. But most companies are or should be doing that because that's the law. Pay gaps are about opportunity. Does everyone have the same opportunity to get to any job in the organization, basically? And that's not happening. And it's not an individual company problem. It's a societal problem. And so until we fix some of the societal things, we're really struggling within companies to fix it individually. But companies are obviously a massive part of society. And so as companies fix it, then society will fix as well, right? So it's a sort of ecosystem that we've got going on. And we have been reporting on gender pay gap now for 7 years, and we're not closing the gaps like as easily, because a lot of companies are just reporting it. They're not actually doing something about it. But the companies that are doing things about it, the things they're talking about, they're looking at a lot is distribution of people within the organization. Demographics is really important. How many senior women do we have? And what's the time to promotion, for example? Are men progressing quicker than women in this organization? And why is that? And how can we change the culture so that we're able to have flexibility within the organization is a really big thing for men as well as women. So it shouldn't be women need part-time work and men work full-time. Companies have to change the way they think about things outside the workforce in order to be able to help things inside the company. And so obviously a lot of that's caring responsibilities, but it's also health-related things. Age comes into it. And it's just, as a company, how do we make sure that we can keep people happy in our organization and have them progress through it? One of the main problems we have is occupational segregation. We have vertical segregation, not as many women at the top, but we also have occupational segregation where women and people of color and people of different demographics go into certain occupations and certain groups within the organization. And so it's not just about vertical segregation. This is a big thing, but it's also about where people are in the organization and whether those groups are being paid differently.
But you have these people who say there's no such thing as gender pay gap, or it's because of people's choices and people make the wrong choices. But actually, if you're not given the full information in the first place as to what are the best choices to make, how can you possibly know what the best choices to make are, go into the best paid careers, get paid the best? So it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy when people don't always have access to the same information and resources in the first place.
Yeah, and I have a problem with the word choice often when they say that. A lot of people say, well, they choose to work part-time because they want to look after the kids. And it's like, well, they don't necessarily choose that. What they do is that's the way the cookies crumbled for them, right? They can't afford childcare, so they have to have a job that allows them to pick children up, which is only jobs that are lower paid, right? That's not really a choice, although that's what people say. It's a lot further back than that. It's like, how are we helping our young girls to decide what sort of work they want to do? There's still problems where you're saying women and girls are going to be able to play nurses and boys are going to play doctors. Is still a problem at that really young age. But also, I think we need to fix the pay problem, because it shouldn't be that some roles are way higher paid than others. Almost means that like you're always in trouble if you happen to decide that you want to go into one career rather than another. With the equal pay for equal value idea, that really shouldn't be a problem. If you're a finance manager or an HR manager and you've come up and you've got the same level of experience and the same kind of qualifications for those roles, you shouldn't be paid differently. But the market data problem has created an issue where some roles are paid more. Usually those roles are male-dominated roles. And so we have to fix that point as well as the whole cultural conception of female and male work and caring responsibilities and life, basically. It's a big problem.
And it's complicated as well, isn't it? So, for example, when you get recruiters in the mix and it's a really competitive marketplace, you might get people getting moved around where there's more relative scarcity for that role. But then if you're in a area of the market where it's not as competitive, there isn't the same level of scarcity, you don't get picked up, you don't get moved around. There's also no commission involved for the recruiters. So you just end up stuck in the same role, you end up stagnating, you've got the flexibility perhaps that you want, but you're not getting any salary progression.
That's right. We talk about market data, right? That's the words we use for how much people should be paid. But actually, it's not a market. You can't just choose raspberries over strawberries. prices don't go up as well as down. Pay doesn't go down generally, and it's really hard to move. And you're at companies not just for the pay. You're at companies for the reasons why the companies exist in the first place. You're there for your colleagues. You're there for the flexibility it gives you. You're there for the location. So it's not an easy thing to just keep moving jobs. But it is true that if you move jobs, then you're more likely to increase your pay quicker than if you stay in jobs. And that's a problem in itself as well, because that causes compression within companies, because people are joining at a higher rate than the people who are already there. And that causes internal inequity, which needs to be fixed. So all of these things are related, but we should be thinking about work and jobs in a different way than that market idea, because it's not like that. And you have to think about it holistically. The job is the whole job. And that's why it's quite important to be thinking about when you're a company, when you're talking about pay, you obviously need to talk about gender pay and try and close those gaps. But you also need to be talking about, like, what does the company give to their employees? And so make it so it's the whole
package. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, Vicky, I feel like we could talk about this all day.
Talk about this for days and days. So I apologize.
No, it's great. So the parts of Europe and some US states have been experimenting with ways to address the gap, including regulation, which is quite interesting. So I was reading around this issue, as I do all the time, but one of the things it was saying is all these states are doing better at closing gaps, or different countries. I think it was maybe Luxembourg was maybe mentioned. But what does that mean? Because that's confusing in itself, isn't it? Because they can't all be doing the same thing.
Yeah. And so the European Pay Transparency Directive is really exciting. Unfortunately, we're not in the EU and the UK, but we're very much hopeful that we can bring some of this stuff to the UK as well, because there'll be companies who will be doing this anyway globally, because they'll have to do it for all the European states. And it's all focused on transparency, which is brilliant. Obviously, there's requiring pay ranges on job postings. There's job boards that require it in the UK, even though it's not a requirement legally. But obviously, loads of US states are doing that, as well as the whole of the European Union. But also they're making internal transparency a thing. And I think this is where it's really important. Employees can find out the group they're in, the pay range for that group, and the pay gap for that group. And so what you're doing is forcing a company, we'll go back to the idea of job architecture and all that, you're forcing a company to set up themselves so that they can be transparent with their employees and their prospects and candidates and everyone. And so in order to do that, you really have to get your house in order first. But that is something that I think it would be brilliant if it came to the UK. The best practice is going to be that anyway. The interesting thing is each country then has to take the European directive and put it into their own laws. And so that is the minimum that they have to do. And so there will be countries who go further. France already has a couple more rules, and they're probably not going to take those away, I can't imagine. But there'll be other countries who haven't gone as far as this, but actually then go further. So it is going to be really interesting to see. They have to put it into their law within 3 years. So it's coming in the next year or so. And it'll be just so interesting to see what each country does and how that impacts the pay gaps in those countries, but also across Europe, and the kind of contagion with the other countries around the world.
Yeah. So basically, at the moment, but in the UK, people can put a job out there, but they could advertise it with absolutely no salary whatsoever.
Right.
There's no range. There's no anything. Right. Some companies will talk about happy to talk flexible working, whatever, but you probably don't also know exactly what the policies are like. So we had a discussion a few weeks ago with a group of people, and we were talking about, well, what about sharing what flexibility looks like and all of those things as well. So the more
it means completely different things to different companies and different jobs and different levels. Yeah, exactly. I mean, what does flexibility mean? It could just mean you get to work from home a couple of days a year. That's not. Or it could mean a job share, right? It's a whole range.
Yeah. So transparency across the board is, if you're trying to achieve all of these things, transparency across the board. But I suppose for companies, that's difficult because there's quite a lot of complexity with that. So it's trying to manage that as carefully as they can as well by bringing people like you in, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. The more I think about it, the more I think simplicity is the way forward. And it's really hard. If you're a new company setting up now, it's quite easy. You can set yourselves up so that actually you're paying for the things you're saying you're paying for, and that's it. And you don't go wrong. And as you're building, you have levels, and then maybe you start having job families and you can build from there. If you're a big company with thousands of employees and you haven't got any job architecture, it's a real job to get it all into a position where you can then be transparent. And companies just have to start doing it. In the UK, in a way, we're kind of lucky in the fact that we don't have this EU regulation coming down the road. So we potentially have longer to get ourselves in order because we don't know when it's coming. But if we do get a Labour government, they're talking about putting in a lot of these things. So I do think the company should be starting now, even if we don't have to, because it is best practice.
Yes. So from the practical steps that individual employers should be taking, obviously dependent on where they are at the moment. So that kind of level, that kind of how long is a piece of string? Well, it depends where they are, where they're starting from now. But if there were some good things that they should be doing, what would be the things that you would, if you didn't have all the information to hand and you didn't know all the things they were doing already, but what would the generic bits of advice be that you'd give them?
So firstly, get your job architecture sorted so you understand which jobs are similar to other jobs. And you can look at it through different lenses. You can look at it through a job title lens. You can look at it through a comparable job lens. And you can look at it at a level lens. So they're the three lenses in which to look at pay equity. And so that's the first thing. So that's about jobs, not about pay. Obviously, you need to just make sure then you can check the pay of those areas. So they're the things you need to do. But again, pay gaps are not about pay, they're about opportunity. So then you're looking at your structures, particularly around things like promotions, about recruitment, about how people move through the organization, what happens if they go on leave and come back again, and what about flexibility and that sort of thing. And really the main thing you need to be doing is collecting data around all this. You need to know how many people are leaving, where they're leaving, why they're leaving, how long it takes to get a promotion, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of data to be collected. But start now because it's coming.
You heard it here, people. So what can our community do to engage with your work? How can they keep up with your latest thoughts and wisdom?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Vicky Hickman. So it's quite easy. And there's any one of me. I am not great at social media posting, but it is on my list of things to do this year. So this is one of my resolutions. So I will be doing that. But Payscale is always posting as well. So you can follow Payscale and there's lots of people on there. We have a really good social media team. And yeah, so follow me on LinkedIn and I'll get better at it.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing great already. Could we connect on LinkedIn? So I think for the audience, the message is don't be scared of this stuff, because I can imagine if you're in an HR department, it potentially is quite a scary thing because you've got all these people that work for you and you don't want to upset them. You don't want to upset the apple cart. But equally, you've got to report on things. You've got to do things. So I think it's be curious about this stuff and find out as much as you can about it is quite a key message. And likewise, if you're in the employment market and you're the employee, is understand as much as you can. Knowledge is power, isn't it? If you get all of these things, that's going to help you potentially, if you're having to negotiate or whatever you're having to do, if you're changing job, whatever, the knowledge is power all round, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the reason it's scary is because we don't really understand how to fix it easily. But data is the key to all of this. So the more data you have, the more you understand exactly why you've got pay gaps you've got, and then you can fix it. But I think we need to be better at talking about pay. That's the key for all of us. And so talking to our friends, talking about that, it's really important that we help each other as well, make sure that we can get to a situation where we're not being paid unfairly.
It's not a very British thing to do, though, is it, always, to talk about?
I know.
People are quite, sometimes it's a bit difficult. Also, I think sometimes if you do talk about money, sometimes people are kind of, oh, I wasn't ready for that.
You have to set it up well, right? We're going to have a conversation about this. And I feel like it's like groups are really good. Let's have a get together as a group and we agree in advance we're going to talk about this sort of stuff. And then it's the right thing to do. Everyone knows that it's the right thing to do, but it is true. It's scary to talk about it. And we're not going to get any better if we continue to be secretive about this sort of stuff.
Yeah. And I think if you create a safe space, and we're big on creating safe spaces here for conversations, exactly, as well, so you frame everything right and you've got the right people involved, then it's a good thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Amazing. Vicky, you know, what's coming up next for you? What are you looking forward to? What are you excited about? It can be in work. It can be out of work. It can be whatever you like.
In work, I'm really excited to see what happens for the EU directive and how that goes into other countries. I just think this is a really exciting time in Europe and in the US because of the transparency laws, but in Europe in particular, I think it's really exciting. We're completely going to change the way we do pay. And to that, from a work point of view, is just really, really exciting.
So Vicky, you are an absolute superstar. Absolute pleasure chatting with you. Just to say thank you ever so much, Vicky.
No, it's definitely my pleasure.
In this section of the show, we hear about the contributors who have shared their stories in our new written issue. The stories include Alicia De Freitas, MBE, Head of Policy, Research and Advocacy at the Fawcett Society, discusses the work the Fawcett Society is doing to tear down the structural barriers around the gender pay gap. Alicia also shares how the womanthology community can get involved. Alice Martin, Head of Research at the Work Foundation, shares details of the recently published research she and her team have been working on that examines the need for employers to swap zero-hours contracts for more secure, flexible working. Alice makes the case for the way the system can be improved, not just for women, but for other underrepresented groups. And I also feature in this issue writing about gender pay gap reporting in the UK and consider what more can be done by employers to speed up closure of the gaps that remain. Do check out our website, womanthology.co.uk, to read the full stories. Sadly, that's all we have time for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, if you want to support what we do, then share the link for the show on social media and also follow the show. Your feedback is really important, so please do rate and review the show in your podcast app. Do join us for our next podcast episode where we feature epic women in technology.